I'm Roxy Giddings, and I live in Tacoma, outskirts of Tacoma, about a block from Pacific Lutheran University in Washington State.
Cool. This is Anders Peterson, the intern pastor at Holden Village, summer 2012. And Roxy, when was the first time you came up to Holden Village?
I came up in September of 1968 with the PLU faculty. I was a faculty wife.
Ah, and who was your spouse?
Bill Giddings. He taught chemistry at PLU and is retired now. So,
okay.
Been coming up here for a long time.
Yeah.
We had our third child in December after the September I was up here. So he claims to have come before he was born.
Ah. And can you paint the picture of what it would have been like to arrive and kind of make the trip to Holden Village?
Well, we came up on the boat, and it was a nice little trip. We got off, and we stood up in the back of a flatbed truck and hung on to each other and the sides of the flatbed and came up the switchbacks all the way up in the dust, and the dirt was blowing all over us. And some of us were kind of wishing we'd known, or we wouldn't have worn anything white, because once you got the tailing stuff on you, it didn't ever wash out. Your clothes that you had that were white were not white again.
Oh, right. Yeah. Maybe that's how tie-dye got started, huh?
I don't know.
To keep, to color up the things that had been spoiled from the...
Yeah, it would work.
And how about, what was this place like, Holden Village? Entering into it in that era?
It was... I had no expectations. I had no idea what was up here. Bill joined the faculty in 1961, so we were already well entrenched in the faculty, and I knew the people that I was with. But at that point, they had been at Paradise 1 year. They had a faculty retreat, so we all got to go, and the spouses got to go. One time, I sat in on a faculty meeting, which of course you couldn't do that now, because they're all private, you know, they don't let anybody from the outside listen to their faculty meetings, but they threw out three committees, and I looked at Bill and I said, this is the right place to be.
Wow.
But the village itself was very much like it is right now, looked very much like it. And of course the paths, the paved, the ones with stones and so on, those were all just dirt, and it was quite slippery. It's steep, and so we really had to be careful, but of course we were so young then, we didn't even notice. But the tailings were really interesting. When you hiked up on the trail up towards like Holden Lake or someplace like that and looked back, the wind blew the tailings higher than the mountaintops. You could see it was orange, clear to the tops and beyond. So there's a lot of tailings off in the woods around here, a lot of them. But the ground doesn't look as dark as it used to, or as orange as it used to, because they covered them. And so they're fairly covered now, and there's not nearly as much of that stuff going on. But it was, and there were cores everywhere. We took the cores out. The luggage was always extremely heavy when we went home.
Wow.
Everybody's luggage. I don't know how the boat could even carry us out. Everybody took cores home, and we still have them. They also took those little ceramic things that they did some testing in. I can't think of the name of them.
Can you explain what cores is?
Cores is when they drilled into the mountainside and pulled out the rock. And then they would pull it out in long strings and lay it in boxes and then investigate it to find the copper. They're looking for the ore body. And so there are hundreds of these cores. And if you really look carefully around, I mean, I saw one in the flower bed up there. They're about as big around as maybe my dad's thumb.
Right.
And but there are some much larger ones. There's another one in the flower bed up there by one of the chalets, and I was surprised when I saw it because I've never seen one that size before. It's about probably 2.5 inches across.
So you began coming up in the 60s, and have you been coming up regularly since?
I was trying to figure out, except when we were on sabbatical and we were out of the country or something, I think we've been here about 40 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
A That's really cool.
It is. I do have to say something about the difference in the dining hall. When we first came, the bell would ring and you had to go in or you didn't get to eat.
Really?
Yeah. And they didn't scrape plates or anything like that. You did have to clean off your plate. But it was before they had anything except a big septic tank out behind Narnia. And that was a real problem because it kept getting too full and it would get plugged up and all that sort of thing. And volunteers don't always get the message. It's very hard to do everything with volunteers. You don't have somebody on top of everything. I mean, that's why we hire a carpenter and a cook and so on, so that we don't get ourselves dead,
right.
Which we could do if we weren't careful. But the dining hall, they set the tables for every meal. They wash the table and set the table for every single meal.
Wow.
And at breakfast time, they have these little glasses in the middle of your plate and have juice in them. And I mean, and the silverware was on the table, and then they served you. And then if you needed something more, and I mean, everybody had to do eight. And you had to look at that and say, I'm dividing that by eight and I'm taking my 1/8. And if you didn't, and sometimes, you know, you get a teenage kid has to take half of it. And we would all just kind of watch. But after a while, then you could hold up this tray and the waitress would come and get it and put some more in it. So that went on for years like that. You couldn't go in there. They kept the cereal in boxes up above the silver place where you can go up to the front to get more food. And it was something. You had to have an adult in there to get the cereal down. Then you had to keep that door shut all the time to the little freezer or ice box for the milk. It was just horrendous. And kids hated the food. And it was, you know, it's a lot of green vegetables, which they don't like.
Sure.
And so my kids did okay, as long as they could get the bread. And they let the kids have lots of bread. So that we took bread up to our room, too. And there were mice everywhere. They would come in under the doors. They still do that, you know, if you don't keep that stuff out of your room.
Right. Yeah.
So
what do you think has made you keep coming up all these years? What's special about holding?
Well, it's like I have over 30 first cousins, and we get together once a year, and this is like that. Mm. We like each other, you know. And if you like your cousins, and y'all get together, it's just a blast. And that's the way it is here. I mean, we all kind of have the same parental upbringing. I mean, we have the same, not religious, but ethically. We're honest, we care about people and each other, and you know, I mean, we don't talk a lot of politics or anything, but we do care about each other, and that's the way it is up here. It's just like everybody cares. Sometimes at home you say to a child who's misbehaving or doesn't understand what's going on, and you say something to them like, maybe you didn't want to do that, you know, and they'll turn around and sneer at you and make some kind of a snide remark, you know, if you're back home. But up here, the child says, oh, I'm sorry, and you almost faint.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the kids all are quite well behaved, even the ones that have problems, mm-hmm. emotional or some kind of problems, they get so much nourishment from everyone around that it's like, hey, this place is real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like that, isn't it? So, what do you think you and your family have brought to Holden over the years?
Oh,
How have you made an impact on this place?
I don't know. I guess talking about it on the outside, too. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've told about Holden. And I've only known a couple of people that I didn't think would like it. Just because they have kind of an attitude or something that wouldn't fit. They wouldn't be happy here because it's just too, this is kind of a regimented place, and it's hard to know what all the rules are. There's a gazillion rules up here, but everybody follows them, so it's easy.
Right.
But there are some people that, and I know of one guy who was, I think he was doing drugs up here years ago when we were up here one winter, and he finally went out. They finally just escorted him out because he just would not get along with anybody. But I think he was in the process of having a nervous breakdown.
Sure.
I do. I think he was mentally ill.
Mm.
But you just can't have drugs up here. You can't. There's a lot of people up here getting well. They're
right.
in recovery.
Right.
And so, you know.
Yeah. So what do you tell people when you tell them about Holden?
I say, well, if you want to get away from it all and you're sick and tired of your kid just playing around on a little machine with his thumbs, I suggest you come to Holden. Or if you yourself want to get out of that computer mode,
right?
Come to Holden. I have not even looked at a newspaper, and I'm going home tomorrow. A whole week. I haven't. That's just incredible for me.
Right.
I read the paper. The Coma paper is so small now that I read the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
So it's really.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there a place in the village like that has particular importance to you?
We came up one winter. Bill got sabbatical. He had a sabbatical coming. And our daughter said, Dad, you should go to Holden for your sabbatical and stay up all winter. And he said, oh, I don't really have anything to contribute and blah, blah, blah. So that's all right. We can pay some money and, you know, pay half price or whatever it is. And she said, well, you'll never find out unless you ask. And so he asked and they said, okay, come on. So we came up and we stayed in Chalet 3. And he brought a whole bunch of boxes of books and papers, and he wrote like 10 what you'd call white papers. He wrote a whole lot of stuff about the smelter in Tacoma, and you know that it's gone now, and they're actually building on the site. They're building beautiful homes on the site, but it was a smelter, and the copper from Copper Mountain was put through the mill here, sent down in the form of they call it, I can't remember, but anyhow, it was in great big tanks on the bus on the road downhill, went down on the barge, got off on the train, and went to Tacoma, Washington, and went to the Ruston smelter. And that's where they got the copper out of the ore, actually took it out of the ore. And it was such a clear process that they had there. That they were getting some of the dirtiest ore from all places all over other parts of the world, because that was such a good process. But of course, the crap went into the air and floated all over everybody and contaminated the ground everywhere in Tacoma and all around and Vashon Island. But anyway, that was, we came up in the winter and he wrote these white papers for his students so that they would not have to do all this background studying and everything. He did it all for them and then said, here's the paper on this milter and here's the paper on this other thing and doing environmental stuff. It's in,
neat.
Yeah.
That's cool.
They were doing environmental chemistry.
Yeah. In the 40 years, have you learned a skill here by participating in
Ankle looming, and that was one story I wanted to tell you about.
Oh, let's hear it.
There's a pattern in the ankle loop weaving book, and it's called Alfredo. And when we were up here that winter, Alfredo was here. He was a young man, and I really can't remember where he was from, but he was fluent another language and had never been in the United States before, so he came to Holden green, you know, something. Anyway, he was down in, that was when the very first year they had crafts in the basement of Quinonea, and they split the whole place out, and so there was one great big long room, and they would warp the looms and everything down there, but we had these little ankle looms which we could carry around. The other ones are, you know, they have to sit on a table or something. And so he just started warping this thing and doing this weaving, and he invented a pattern that is, it's kind of bumpy. We'd always done these flat ones before, and they were kind of pretty, and they're nice, and they still have them down there. But here's this pattern. You get back in the back of the book a little ways, and it, all of a sudden you come to Alfredo, and it's all one color. The warp and the weft both were the same thing. And yet this has this wonderful diamond-shaped pattern all the way through it. And, of course, we were just stunned. Here's this young man. It's no problem for him. And so then we just put the pattern. I told him, I said, you have to write that pattern down. And he did it in colors. He didn't do it in solid color, but over in the book right now, it's a solid color, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful maroon pattern. The other thing I just in cooperation with everybody is one of the things that I really think about when I'm up here, because it's such community. Most places where I am, it's not community like this. I mean, the choir in our church has grown until it's about 25 people, which is very large for an Episcopal church choir right now. I mean, in this particular climate in this country right now, people are not going to church a lot. So we have this wonderful choir. And so what was I going to tell you about the choir? Got sidetracked. Anyway, I was going to tell you about what happened when we came up. We came up in the snow, in the Bombardier.
Okay.
This Bombardier, this thing we're sitting in here right
now.
But you can take it over an avalanche. The avalanche comes down. They can't plow it all out fast enough. So they plow out some of it, enough of it, so that you can go in the Bombardier, but it has to be like on ice and snow the whole time. You can't get down on the road with this because it's got like spikes on the wheels.
Right.
And so anyhow, we came up here and it was snowing, and we watched the snow pile up and we enjoyed it a lot. And I worked in the library and I worked down in the crafts. And so that's how I got acquainted with Alfredo. But the funny story that I had was, when we got up here, they would always get in line and take care of everything in a line. You know, I mean, if you're going to do a practice for the hose house or something, you get the whole hose out, and you got to have like 25 people on the hose. And if you don't, and you turn the water on, you blow the hose house apart. So, I mean, we'd have to do everything together. We have to know how. So we're all standing out there. We're unloading the truck with all this food, and I'm standing there in the snow, and I'm taking my handful of boxes, and I'm passing them to the next person, you know, just standing in one spot and just passing it along. Well, somebody handed me a box of celery, and it just went down in the snow.
Oh.
I couldn't lift it, and I just went right down until my hands were resting on the snow.
Oh,
I could
goodness.
Not lift it. It was so funny, and everybody was laughing, and they were pulling me out of the snow.
Oh,
it was just a kick. But boy, I don't know. A box of celery must weigh about 40 pounds or
Holy
more.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think the last question I want to ask is, we're celebrating 50 years
yep.
here. And as we kind of look forward to another 50 years and more of ministry here, what do you hope will remain consistent about Holden Village?
Well, I heard about God's sense of humor by coming up here and listening to all this stuff. There's so many things I've learned. One thing I learned was that there was a young man here when we were here in the wintertime, and he was in just total despair. And I didn't know why he was such a sad person, but we had a seminar on gay lesbian stuff. And he came out. And I had no idea that this is something that, I mean, I made a complete turnaround on that subject.
Wow.
I was very much against it. I thought it was a lifestyle. I thought it was something that people chose. I had no idea people were born like that.
Yeah.
And that's what he said. I was born like that. And then there was another man that had written a letter to somebody up here, and I think it was Jesse. She was a cook, and anyhow, somebody read this letter, and he was like the father of a gay man, and he said, if you're thinking that they choose this, would you choose to be ostracized and treated like garbage and hated by regular normal straight people? Would you choose that? You'd never choose that.
Yeah.
So anyway, the upshot is, maybe my husband said this before, but he said, John Schramm told Bill this little story. One of the the guys came to him, and he was one of the directors at the time we were here when it was in the winter.
Yeah.
He said, he came to him and he said, do you think that God forgives people for being gay or something like that? And we're something about brokenness. Anyhow, John's reply, or forgive people for being gay or something like that. And John's reply was, well, that depends on whether there's brokenness. You know, have you broken your relationship with God? And his response was, well, you know, if there's no brokenness, I guess you don't need to worry about it.
Kind of. Yeah.
So it was really, yeah. It's a great place for people that are gay, great place for people that are alcoholics, or it's not so good for people who eat too much, though, because it's pretty good food up here. But people didn't used to think that it was.
Yeah,
especially the when the cooks were vegetarians, and they thought that anybody who wanted to have they want all this hot spices, and that's not really true. Most people don't really like them a lot, and so if you don't put the hot spices on, just put it out on the thing. Let them dump their own hot spices on.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Anyway, it's been great.
Any final words?
Oh, it's a great place.
It's a great place.
I'm not at all worried about it. I'm not. Because you can see right now that because this new thing is happening and we're getting all this stuff sort of cleaned up. I mean, it's impossible, but they'll get under control a little bit better, and maybe we'll have fish in the creek. That would be cool. And there's some good things going to happen, and also the fact that the Rio Tinto is cooperating. I mean, they act like nice people.
Yeah.
And
they are nice people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but when she said they weren't allowed to cuss in front of the villagers, oh, I just laughed so hard when I first heard that. I thought our villagers better find out that they're not supposed to cuss in front of those people either.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Oh, you're welcome. It was really fun.